Welcome, everybody. The Board of Education meeting will now come to order. Mr. Ellis, will you lead us in the pledge?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Board member Steve Vondrak is not able to attend the meeting in person due to an employment-related obligation. In accordance with District 41 policy, Mr. Vondrak notified the district and superintendent's office that he would not be physically present for the board meeting, but would like to participate in the meeting by phone. May I have a motion to approve Mr. Vondrak's participation by phone in tonight's meeting?
Motion.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes.
Mrs. Howard?
Yes.
Mrs. Black?
Yes.
Yes.
Mr.
Smith?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson? Yes. Mrs. Decker, please call the roll.
Mr. Kenwood?
Here.
Mr. Vondrak? Mr. Smith?
Here.
Mrs. Howard?
Here.
Mrs. Black?
Here.
Mr. Ellis?
Here.
Mrs. Nelson?
Here. Thank you. Welcome, everybody. I know there are members here who wish to give public participation. I'd like to remind everybody if we could limit our comments to 3 minutes, and I'll give you a kind of a 30-second heads-up before that's done. We welcome anything written in hand so we can have that as documentation. And I know last or 2 weeks ago, thank you to Mr. Rath and to Mrs. McAllich for sending
Milich,
thank you, for sending board comments so I could pass that along. So we welcome that. If your comments as you listen to them have been what I would call substantially reflected, then we'd appreciate you providing the green form and let us know that as you introduce yourself. Give us the hard copy and we'll make sure we get that into the record. All right? We just want to leave room for everybody. So anybody who wishes to provide public participation.
Ma'am, where would you like me to go? I can sit here.
You can just stand right there if you'd like.
Actually, if you don't mind, and it's more a question of my eyes than anything else.
Sure.
Do you mind if I, can I pull this out just so I can put something in? I'll be a little bit more comfortable.
Sure.
Thank you.
And again, remember to give Mrs. Stecker your green sheet.
Which one is Mrs.
Stecker, okay. Here are.
And I would like to let you know in advance that there are a few people who have been generous enough to give me some time. I will admit I'm from a family of six kids, and I tend to give a little bit more detail than an ordinary person. I thank those of you who have given me up your time.
Well, I appreciate that they chose to do that, but we're still going to limit it to 3 minutes.
Is that customary?
Yes. It is.
Even if
for public participation.
Even if people have given up their time?
Well, we didn't have that conversation ahead of time. The board really requests, this is our business meeting every 2 weeks. I know we've talked about this before, that this is really a business meeting for the board to move business forward, and public participation at the beginning of the meeting and
right.
At the end. And you're certainly welcome to stay and restate at the end if you'd like to. But we'd like to keep this to 3 minutes.
I guess the only thing I can say is my experience last time I participated is that we had several people commenting and it went into about 20 minutes.
You're right. And
three
I didn't.
Yeah.
I'm sorry?
3 minutes a person.
Person.
That's
right.
Correct.
Yes. Yeah.
And I do believe that there are people who have chosen to give up their time. So instead of them speaking, they've given it to me. So
how much time do you need?
I'm hoping no more than 10 minutes.
I will give you 10 minutes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Try to bring as quickly as possible. Many of you may recall my name is Teresa Melich, and I spoke at the last meeting to raise some concerns with regard to the think tank process, as Erica mentioned. Summary comments were provided to the board. I mentioned before as well, I've lived in Glen Ellen since 1999. I have a son in third grade at Forest Glen and a daughter who's attended there, now at middle school in Hadley. And as mentioned before, my perspective on this issue is not only as a concerned parent, but as a professional with over 20 years of experience with large-scale change, currently as a senior organization development consultant with the AMA, and also with an MS and OD from Loyola University. I am not here tonight to just speak on behalf of myself. I've been asked to present the questions and concerns of many District 41 community members who have expressed great concern about the pace, timing, and scope of change that the district is attempting to implement. key stakeholders in the process who we directly impacted feel it is moving too quickly for a large-scale change, and the questions and concerns have not been adequately addressed. There is a general sense that the decision is a foregone conclusion and that a haphazard implementation timeline and deliverables will be pushed to the system without a clear and well-thought-out plan. Define leadership, accountability, clear outcomes, measures, all the things that you would expect to find with large-scale change. Lots of people are asking the same question. Why is such a fundamental change to elementary school learning being rushed through the system? And why is it occurring before installing a new superintendent and almost half of the board positions? The big concern that many parents have voiced is that a change of such magnitude, implemented too quickly and without careful attention to measuring impact and progress, carries a much higher risk of failure, and unfortunately, it's our students and community who pay the price. So, what do we want to talk about? Two things tonight. What are we asking? Two things. One, delay the decision. Two, develop a well-thought-out change implementation process. Let's look at the decision. We are asking you, as a concerned community, to postpone making a decision on whether the district should move forward on the think tank's recommendation until after a new superintendent and board members are installed. This will ensure that those who will be implementing the change and will be held accountable for its outcome will be involved in the process. It doesn't make sense to the community to rush a decision when leadership roles are in flux. The think tank's efforts provide a great foundation for new leadership to build on. So we do want to acknowledge that there has been a lot of good work that's been done. Next thing under delaying the decision, continue, as you've done, to engage key stakeholders. So it's a community effort that ensures we collectively come up with the best approach to achieve what we all want. A great education for our kids. These are our children, and we as parents are especially vested in selecting and implementing an approach that will best prepare them for a successful future. After 18 months of research, parents have only had 5 informational sessions to learn about the proposed changes, with little time to ask questions and provide feedback. Most parents have walked away confused from these sessions with more questions than answers. These sessions are a good start, but it will take much more meaningful interaction discussion for parents to evaluate 18 months worth of research. A large-scale change of this nature deserves the appropriate time, evaluation, validation, and feedback to ensure it's the best approach. Engage, next point here, is we want good representation of teachers who are actually in the classroom with our children teaching fundamental curriculum. The think tank has done a lot of research, but then less than half, 13 of the 34 teachers represented are teachers who have full-time, all-day grade-level curriculum. 13, and I believe there's no third-grade level, you can correct me if I'm wrong, representation, and that also includes kindergarten. So clearly, like a third of people are actually teaching in the classroom with your children every day. This concerns parents who feel those evaluating any new learning approach need to fully understand all the dynamics and nuances of running core classroom curriculum. There are also only 5 parents represented on the think tank, with 17 parents on a separate parent advisory committee. Get buy-in and support from key stakeholders. I think most people can agree this is a key ingredient to any successful change and can only occur when people are engaged in the process in a meaningful way and feel like their questions, concerns are being heard and addressed. During a think tank session at Forest Glen, Dr. Reebok talked about conducting a community survey to gauge support, suggesting that the district would not move forward without community support and buy-in. We think that this would be a prudent approach and would recommend that this action be followed up and taken. One current gauge, since we don't have the benefit of that, of public's opinion is a petition, which has almost 500 electronic and paper signatures, asking the district to slow down this process, gather more input, and take a more thoughtful approach. This should already be a clear signal that there are many parents who are not comfortable with the current approach, direction, and timing in which the district seems to be headed. Karen Carlson also mentioned a survey will be conducted this week with all District 41 teachers. Parents would like to have these results shared with both the board and the public. We also would like to see concrete data that supports the approach the think tank has chosen. So far, no hard data has been shared that would convince parents this is the approach and the best approach to effectively increase our children's chances of educational and global success. The last piece is to develop a well-thought-out change process / implementation plan. So we all know from the last board meeting that we had somebody come up, and I believe that you're taking action tonight on the foreign language proposal. I was glad to see, and it seemed like a marked difference, the process that was being proposed was gradual, with a five-year plan to introduce it into all elementary grades, incorporated a pilot, included a very detailed plan with data to support it, identified specific target goals, and showed collaboration and linkage to both the middle school and high school. A similar effort would seem highly prudent to the level of change which is now under consideration. So if we look at that in comparison to the think tank recommendations, what we're looking at for the think tank is proposing, this is much more significant and will require a much more rigorous and thorough implementation plan. So far, we haven't seen any detailed plan presented to raise the confidence level of parents to demonstrate that all the critical issues, as was presented before on the foreign language piece, we haven't seen that it's measurable, clear objectives. It's critical such an effort be incubated and refined at a small scale with full transparency of results and lessons learned that are shared with teachers, parents, and administrators prior to deploying it on a much larger scale. Such a plan should include a comprehensive training and development process. Bottom line, the importance of a carefully thought-out tactical plan has a direct impact on the success of implementation. And I think what happens often when we get into big scale change is people underestimate what goes into it.
2 minutes, please.
Okay. After 18 months of research, we should appreciate at least 2 to 3 times that amount of time will be required to fully embed a new learning approach within all of the elementary schools. And we need to ensure our teachers are fully trained to deliver curriculum. And so if we look at Waukesha, one of the benchmarked schools, Their teachers are being provided with 3 full months of training over the summer. Ours, all I've heard about, are a couple of in-service workshops and optional training. Bottom line, the entire community has a vested interest in this initiative, not just the parents directly impacted in the elementary school. How we implement any major change to our elementary schools reflects on our community and those who are considering moving to Glen Ellyn. I'm going to give you a quick story. A Glen Ellyn resident was recently contacted by a friend in Chicago whose family is considering moving to the western suburbs. That's exactly what my husband and I did. The friend had heard that Glen Ellyn schools were considering a big change and that these changes were controversial within the community. So clearly it's not just us it's outside this community that people see that this is not an agreed upon change. So, in closing, here's what we're asking. Let's make sure that our focus and primary motivation for any change is what's truly best for our children and community. Slow down the process. Wait until we have new leadership in place before proceeding further so we can take a thoughtful approach to ensure we continue to have a school district that best prepares our kids for the future. That's probably the fastest I've ever talked. Do I have 15 seconds left to just simply thank you for the opportunity on behalf of all the people who have signed the petition? I think with one voice, people wanted to be heard. And it's not one voice. This is representing 500 plus. And those that we talked to who have not yet signed the petition. And we want to be heard. So I graciously thank you for the extra time.
I appreciate
that. I'm sorry. I know my parents, who are no longer here, would accuse me of being a little pushy. But I do appreciate the fact that you granted me this opportunity, and thank you for those of you who gave up your time.
Thank you. And can we have a copy of your written as well, or you could email it?
Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
Sorry, I don't compare at all to Martin Luther King, and this is not typically my comfort zone, but you're gracious to have
me. No, you sounded very comfortable. It was good. Thank you. Yes.
I just want to thank you for everything that I wanted to say resonates with what Therese mentioned, so I just want to turn in my paper.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thanks for coming tonight.
Maybe we save some time.
You never know. We have a long closed session tonight, so we're being prudent. Other public participation, please. Anybody else? All right. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. All right. Under presentations, reports, and initiatives, I'll turn it over to Anne for a moment.
So we don't have a formal presentation planned for this evening, knowing the rigor of the schedule that you have. But we did want to show you something we've sent to you in the past, and you may or may not have had a chance to look at the link. And people have attended think tank meetings. I know the one that was hosted last Wednesday, Karen had a chance to show this Sir Ken Robinson video. And so we thought we'd just take time for you board members. Many of the members of the public may have already seen it, so bear with us. But some of you may not have had a chance to go to this link and take a chance to look at it. So we thought it is connected to the think tank work, and it will speak for itself.
Can we dim the lights closest to the...
Pardon me?
Can we dim the lights?
Oh, dim the lights.
Every country on earth at the moment is reforming public education. There are two reasons for it. The first of them is economic. People are trying to work out how do we educate our children to take their place in the economies of the 21st century. How do we do that? Given that we can't anticipate what the economy will look like at the end of next week, as the recent turmoil is demonstrating. How do we do that? The second, though, is cultural. Every country on earth is trying to figure out how do we educate our children so they have a sense of cultural identity and so that we can pass on the cultural genes of our communities while being part of the process of globalization. How do we square that circle? The problem is they're trying to meet the future by doing what they did in the past. And on the way, they're alienating millions of kids who don't see any purpose in going to school. When we went to school, we were kept there with a story, which is if you worked hard and did well and got a college degree, you would have a job. Our kids don't believe that. And they're right not to, by the way. You're better having a degree than not, but it's not a guarantee anymore. And particularly not if the route to it marginalizes most of the things that you think are important about yourself. And some people say we have to raise standards if this is a breakthrough. You know, but really, yes, we should. Why would you lower them? You know, I haven't come across an argument that persuades me of lowering them. But raising them, of course we should raise them. The problem is that the current system of education was designed and conceived and structured for a different age. It was conceived in the intellectual culture of the Enlightenment and in the economic circumstances of the Industrial Revolution. Before the middle of the 19th century, there were no systems of public education. Not really. I mean, you could get educated by Jesuits, you know, if you had the money. But public education, paid for from taxation, compulsory to everybody and free at the point of delivery, that was a revolutionary idea. And many people objected to it. They said it's not possible for many street kids, working class children, to benefit from public education. They're incapable of learning to read and write, and why are we spending time on this? So there's also built into it a whole series of assumptions about social structure and capacity. It was driven by an economic imperative of the time, but running right through it was an intellectual model of the mind, which was essentially the Enlightenment view of intelligence. That real intelligence consists in the capacity for a certain type of deductive reasoning and a knowledge of the classics originally. What we come to think of as academic ability. And this is deep in the gene pool of public education. There are really two types of people, academic and non-academic. Smart people and non-smart people. And the consequence of that is that many brilliant people think they're not, because they've been judged against this particular view of the mind. So we have twin pillars, economic and intellectual. And my view is that this model has caused chaos in many people's lives. It's been great for some. There have been people who have benefited wonderfully from it. But most people have not. Instead, they suffered this. This is the modern epidemic, and it's as misplaced and it's as fictitious. This is the plague of ADHD. Now, this is a map of the incidence of ADHD in America, or prescription for ADHD. Don't mistake me here. I don't mean to say there is no such thing as attention deficit disorder. I'm not qualified to say if there is such a thing. I know that a great majority of psychologists and pediatricians think there is such a thing. But it's still a matter of debate. What I do know for a fact is it's not an epidemic. These kids are being medicated as routinely as we had our tonsils taken out. And on the same whimsical basis, and for the same reason, medical fashion. Our children are living in the most intensely stimulating period in the history of the earth. They're being besieged with information and calls for attention from every platform, computers, from iPhones, from advertising holdings, from hundreds of television channels. And we're penalizing that for getting distracted. From what? No. Boring stuff. At school, for the most part. It seems to me not a coincidence totally that the incidence of ADHD has risen in parallel with the growth of standardized testing. Now, these kids are being given Ritalin and Adderall and all manner of things, often quite dangerous drugs, to get them focused and calm them down. But according to this, attention deficit disorder increases as you travel east across the country. People start losing interest in Oklahoma. They can hardly think straight in Arkansas. And by the time they get to Washington, they've lost it completely. And there are separate reasons for that, I believe. It's a fictitious epidemic. If you think of it, the arts, and I don't say this exclusively the arts, I think it's also true of science and of math. I say about the arts particularly because they are the victims of this mentality currently, particularly. The arts especially address the idea of aesthetic experience. An aesthetic experience is one in which your senses are operating at their peak, when you're present in the current moment, when you're resonating with the excitement of this thing that you're experiencing, when you are fully alive. An anesthetic is when you shut your senses off and deaden yourself to what's happening. And a lot of these drugs are that. We're getting our children through education by anesthetizing them. And I think we should be doing the exact opposite. We shouldn't be putting them asleep. We should be waking them up to what they have inside of themselves. But the model we have is this. I believe we have a system of education that is modelled on the interest in industrialism and in the image of it. I'll give you a couple of examples. Schools are still pretty much organised on factory lines, ringing bells, separate facilities, specialised into separate subjects. We still educate children by batches. You know, we put them through the system by age group. Why do we do that? You know, why is there this assumption that the most important thing kids have in common is how old they are? You know, it's like the most important thing about them is their date of manufacture. Well, I know kids who are much better than other kids at the same age in different disciplines, you know, or at different times of the day, or better in smaller groups than in large groups, or sometimes they want to be on their own. If you're interested in the model of learning, you don't start from this production line mentality. It's essentially about conformity, and increasingly it's about that as you look at the growth of standardized testing and standardized curricula. And it's about standardization. I believe we've got to go in the exact opposite direction. That's what I mean about changing the paradigm. There was a great study done recently of divergent thinking, published a couple of years ago. Divergent thinking isn't the same thing as creativity. I define creativity as the process of having original ideas that have value. Divergent thinking isn't a synonym, but it's an essential capacity for creativity. It's the ability to see lots of possible answers to a question, lots of possible ways of interpreting a question, to think what Edward de Bono would probably call laterally, to think not just in linear or convergent ways, to see multiple answers, not one. So, I mean, there are tests for this. I mean, one kind of cod example would be people might be asked to say, how many uses can you think of for a paperclip? Well, those routine questions. Most people might come with 10 or 15. People who are good at this might come with 200. And they do that by saying, well, could the paperclip be 200 foot tall and be made out of foam rubber? You know, like, does it have to be a paperclip as we know it, Jim? You know? Now, the testers, and they gave them to 1,500 people in a book called Breakpoint and Beyond. And on the protocol of the test, if you scored above a certain level, you'd be considered to be a genius at divergent thinking. Okay? So my question to you is, what percentage of the people tested, of the 1,500, scored at genius level for divergent thinking? Now you need to know one more thing about them. These were kindergarten children. So what do you think? What percentage at genius level? 98%. Now, the thing about this was it was a longitudinal study. So they retested the same children 5 years later, ages of 8 to 10. What do you think? 15? They retested them again 5 years later, ages 13 to 15. You can see a trend here, can't you? Now, this tells an interesting story. Because you could imagine it going the other way, couldn't you? You start off not being very good, but you get better as you get older. But this shows two things. One is, we all have this capacity. And two, it mostly deteriorates. Now, a lot of things have happened to these kids as they've grown up. A lot. But one of the most important things that happened, I'm convinced, is that by now, they've become educated. They know they've spent 10 years at school being told there's one answer, it's at the back. And don't look. And don't copy, because that's cheating. But outside schools, that's called collaboration. No, but inside schools. Now, this isn't because teachers want it this way, it's just because it happens that way. It's because it's in the gene pool of education. We have to think differently about human capacity. We have to get over this old conception of academic, non-academic, abstract, theoretical, vocational, and see it for what it is. A myth. Second, you have to recognize that most great learning happens in groups, that collaboration is the stuff of growth. If we atomize people and separate them and judge them separately, we form a kind of disjunction between them and their natural learning environment. And thirdly, it's crucially about the culture of our institutions, the habits of the institution and the habitats that they occupy.
So we just wanted to give you a chance to see that if you hadn't had a chance, and know that it was, you know, one of many things that think tanks used over the course of the last 18 months to look at. And I think you know, we've used it mostly as a discussion point. You know, what does that mean for us, and what are the things in there you agree with? What are the things that you might not agree with? And what are the things we don't do that, you know, we should be doing? What are the things we do that are in there that we know are great things? So really more about stimulation than providing answers.
Yeah. Interesting. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
John, could you flip that light switch back on for me? Thank you. Oh, you got it. Sorry. Thanks, Mike. Thank you very much. All right. We're on to action items for the meeting, and that's the consent agenda. Are there any items that board members want removed from the consent agenda to be considered separately? Anything down here?
We were going to talk about discussion of security.
Oh, I'm sorry, discussions.
Yeah,
I missed that. No,
we wanted to start with this discussion item because we are asking the board to take action later in the meeting if you are comfortable with that, and that is to push from our three-step process to a two-step process, getting a security cameras and entrance buzzers in each of our buildings, and we want to expedite that as soon as we possibly can. You'll note there that this is a part of already budgeted dollars, but it will exceed that budget by $20,000. Mm-hmm. And each year we do prioritize which of the security updates we're going to do. In the last couple of years, we've predominantly been updating and replacing cameras and that kind of equipment at Hadley, because it's seen its better life. But we feel that this is one of those items we want to push ahead and have ready to go as soon as possible to give greater distinction between the outside world and the inside world of our schools and allow our office to be able to admit or not admit based on a buzzer system. Any questions on that?
Bob, I think Steve, I know he's not here, but he had asked some questions. I think it was about integration, existing equipment, and whatnot. Mm-hmm. Anything to share on that?
Well, I guess it would be between Mike and I.
Okay.
We thought that the best way to approach it, if we were to go to an IP system, that we maintain our current hardwired system and then possibly move forward with the IP or non-wired system. But the price at this point in time is significantly greater than what we budgeted or what we anticipated to budget. So that we decided to move ahead with the original proposal as we gave it just a couple of weeks ago. We did look into it.
That was going to be my question, if there's any difference between this and I didn't see any from finance last.
Yeah. Significantly greater price with the IP system.
Yeah. Okay.
Then we will, if the board is comfortable, we will ask you to take action on that under the normal action of the of board discussion, and we'll return to other discussion items a little bit later.
Okay.
Thank now you. Consent.
Thanks for catching that. Okay, any items on consent agenda that board members would like removed to hear separately? Hearing none, may I have a motion to approve the consent agenda, which includes human resources personnel report, employment recommendations, resignations. We have our updated personnel report on the table. Finance, facilities, and operations, which includes our treasurer's report, investment schedule, the monthly revenue and expenditure report summary, the summary of bills in our payroll, school district payment order, any vandalism or damage report, disposal of surplus property, and the 2012-2013 FOIA report. Other matters which include our board meeting minutes from January 14th, our regular board meeting, January 14th, our Board of Education regular meeting closed session, January 17th, Board of Education special meeting, and the January 17th, Board of Education special meeting closed session.
Motion.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Mr. Bondria? Mrs. Howard?
Yes.
Mr. Blatt?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Smith.
Yes.
Yes. Under superintendent recommendations, what we just discussed, the security equipment upgrades, the board discussed the administration's recommendation to approve a purchase through ADT Tyco of 13 security cameras with monitors and recorders and 13 A phones with intercom systems at the front and the alternate entrances of each District 41 building, accompanied by a wireless remote duress button system. The approximate cost for this recommendation is $55,000. May I have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation?
Motion.
Second.
Roll call, please. No, I'm sorry, discussion?
So, am I understanding it right that this is a one-time
cost?
Charge cost?
Well, other than maintenance.
So the extra $20,000 over the budgeted amount is...
Well, we normally budget $35,000 each year. So the extra money is just that this goes beyond what we would budget on an annual basis for security equipment.
Okay. It's the hardwired version versus the wireless one.
Good question. Anything else? All right, roll call, please.
Mrs. Howard?
Yes.
Mr. Black?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes.
Yes. Mr. Nelson?
Yes. Thank you. Foreign language recommendation. At the January 14th, 2013 meeting, the board discussed the administration's recommendation to approve a Spanish dual language program at Churchill School, beginning with kindergarten, and Spanish FLES, beginning with grade one at all four elementary schools. Costs for the FLES, the program, including staff, materials, curriculum development, and professional development, would increase each year until full implementation in year five. Total cumulative costs for the first 5 years are estimated to be $2.2 million, $2,262,968. Costs for the dual language program, including curriculum, professional development, and transportation, are estimated to be $42,000 annually. And we have our reports included, and I know that Katie is here tonight as well with Mrs. Carlson. May I have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation as presented?
Motion.
Sure. Discussion, please.
I'm distributing to you in answer to, I think, a question that Dan may have asked earlier around the ability for us to sustain the foreign language program over time. And so This is just a looking at several major programmatic expenses that we have, and so there's an overlap here for some of our other discussions as well, including early childhood, to demonstrate to you what occurs over the next 5 years with full implementation of our major initiatives. And so based on that, we believe that we are sustainable. Mm-hmm. To predict beyond 5 years, of course, is a prediction that is beyond what we can reasonably do anyway. But any adjustments that we need to make over the course of those 5 years are very doable within the current expenditure plan that we have.
Obviously, I'm going to support this. I've been a big fan of doing this. It's taken a long time to get here. It's, to me, the way we got here, it just seems so easy in the end. So I wish we had pushed harder on this. I still believe with more divergent thinking that we could do it more than just one grade at a time. So even though this is a rollout to all our schools, not really a pilot, and I'm considering a pilot, and we'll continue to push that we divergently think how we do more with this, because I think this is great. So. Mm-hmm.
And I know I had some questions on the finances, and even though I think the sheet we see in front of us shows in 2015-16 with all the things we're talking about, mm-hmm. we're looking at a deficit spend door. Bob, you said that you feel we can recover that in 2-3 years?
It's certainly manageable, that type of vibe.
So I just want to make sure the rest of the board is comfortable mm-hmm. seeing that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I would echo John's comments. You know, I got a first grader, which means he's not going to be able to participate in this. So it'd be nice if there was a way for that to happen for all kids last year.
Do we want Katie to give us some feedback on that? Because I know you talked about it the last time, why this model and why is it rolled out this way? Do you mind speaking to that again?
Sure. We had looked at many angles of how to implement this at more grade levels so more kids could participate in it. But we have concerns around curriculum. If the way that we want to build it is to infuse it into what kids are already learning, and to do that, we would have to build curriculum for each of the grade levels. In doing that, we would have to continue to sustain the curriculum costs at every grade level for every year. And at this point, it would be hard to be able to implement all of that curriculum starting in year one. So it would be a difficult cost, but then it would also be difficult to implement for teachers to be writing that curriculum and be able to implement first thing in August.
So even that, because Katie and I, we talked about it, what if we did it at first and second? Because you want to develop that curriculum more thematically around the content, you couldn't give both first and second the same curriculum. So because it would be connected to what, you know, their science and social studies and math. Year two then, as your first graders become second graders, they're now year two learning the language. So you'd have to change it again because they're not starting from scratch like they were the year before. Mm-hmm. And we are concerned about hiring enough foreign language teachers to kind of implement it right off the bat. even from a timing perspective, wanting to get ahead of that because they're harder to come by.
Right.
The elementary level.
Yeah, it's a more difficult position.
Elementary teachers.
I know Lori's talked about that, yeah.
Again, you know, my comments are not, you guys know I'm thrilled, I'm happy, you guys have done a great job. We challenged you last year or whenever when we came back and said, let's make this happen. So I'm very thankful for it. Just got to get some divergent thinking going. How we continue to get this going and not make it a 5-year thing.
I agree with John and Dan. And John and I have talked before about the implementation of the cross grade levels, and I think that the logic is very clear and makes perfect sense to me. So I do wish that we could do it in every grade right now. I wish we could have done it 5 years ago, to be honest, but I'm happy, as I think we all are, that we're getting going. The presentation was excellent. The logic behind it was excellent. The benefits are more than I think we know. So I'm very excited for it and can't wait to get started.
We've been pushing for this for a long time, so I'm glad to see it come to fruition. It'd be interesting if you have multi-age in your classrooms. You obviously could start it at a much earlier age because you wouldn't have to be changing. But again, as a parent, I'm sure you know everybody's disappointed if you have that first grader this year who's not going to get it next year. But it has to start somewhere. So I'm just glad that it's starting for next year. So thank you. And thank you for taking our thoughts, because I know we kind of came hard at you guys last spring on it that we wasn't quite the recommendation we were looking for. So we appreciate that you went back and took another look at how we can make it happen.
In the interest of full disclosure, I do have a kindergartner, so she's going to benefit from that. But I also have a third and a fourth grader who will not. Yeah. So there you go.
There you go. One third. Thank you, Katie.
Any other comments? All right, roll call, please.
Mr. Black?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
See.
Mr.
We.
Mr. Howard?
Yes.
See.
Yes. Thank you. All right. Superintendent's report.
Latin for you.
Okay. I just want to give the board a quick update on two things that are happening statewide in the next coming weeks. One is the five essential survey that we're examining now in terms of the appropriate and most expeditious way to implement. That is a requirement of the state. It will be incorporated into the school report card in the future. It's a survey that evaluates or assesses school climate satisfaction, not totally unlike the survey we currently do, but it will be something that replaces our survey, which is disappointing in one aspect, and yet we're looking forward to having data from this particular survey. And that the window starts at the beginning of February, goes through the end of March. We'll post our access to that, you know, really pushing for people to participate during a window of time, but anyone will be able to go in from February once it's open, because the link is statewide. Mm-hmm. So we'll begin to send out e-news on that and get people directed toward the right link so that we can get strong community and staff input. Different from our survey, fourth and fifth graders we traditionally surveyed are not included in the state survey, and so we'll have to have some conversation about what we're going to do with that, whether we're going to continue with our own survey of fourth and fifth graders.
Anne, can I ask a quick question? Mm-hmm. Is there a verbatim portion, like we include people's comments with a character, you know, number, but is it just a multiple choice kind of survey, or is there an opportunity to give comment?
Julie, there's no comment. I don't think there's a comment section. It's just a forced, you know, ranked order.
Okay.
And then the other thing that, you know, I think we've alluded to and we'll be talking more about and giving you greater detail about that is the state's reconfiguration of last year's ISAT scores with the new Common Core predictors of how we're scoring, and so they'll be releasing that statewide. We've taken a look at it internally at this point. We still have some questions we want to look at, and we still have some things we want to examine on that, but we'll be sharing that information with you too, and that is represents a, you know, a shift.
Is that the cut score? Is that
the cut scores, okay. They've altered it. Mm-hmm. The new test, of course, will have new Common Core questions in it, but what they've tried to do is give you a picture of, okay, if we had the Common Core last year here, and here you're with the ISAT, here's what your scores were last year, here's what your scores would be in the translation. So we'll share that with you as we finalize our examination of that.
Is the root cause of that is that the standards have been pushed down a grade, if you will? Is that a fair way to look at it? Or?
That's one way of looking at it, that the expectation at grade level is a little bit higher at that lower level. You know, so each grade level, we've used the analogy before that it's about a grade level ahead. Mm-hmm. And then the kinds of questions that will be asked on the new test will be different. One example would be that in a math you might have a solution, you know, it's an A, B, C, or D, and only one right answer, whereas in the new there may be several possible answers, and it will be a multi-step. You have to demonstrate an understanding of a multi-step process. So a little different rigor to the questions.
Does that data affect AYP, or is that...
It will not. This time around, it will not affect AYP. So, and finally, Bob gave this update at piece of information at Finance. I just wanted to pass it along in case you hear something. We've had a request from a developer in Glendale Heights to waive our developer donation fees. And we, while we haven't given a solid response to them, we anticipate not granting that request. 87 has already communicated to them that they will not. It's a senior citizen development, and so their argument is that because they will not be adding any impact into our district by having children attend our schools, that they should not have to pay the impact fees. And because they're in a TIF, we feel as though they've already gained a benefit in joining the community. So we're tending towards not approving that waiver request. And that's it for me. All right. Board reports. Under committees, Drew, Finance.
In the Finance real quick. We had the Hadley LMC remodel bid reports. and that'll come to the next full board meeting. So we're moving that forward. The total cost of the LMC remodel is roughly $1.1 million. We also talked about the annual classroom furniture and equipment bid, which is part of the agent obsolescence program. That's another $500,000. We talked about the capital projections reconciliation report that Bob presented with us. Again, we'll come to the full board for further discussion. And the fund balance discussion, which we discussed at Finance, and we'll go to the full board. Again, going back to the capital project reconciliation, where Bob does this every year, and we were within $1,000 of $1 million of projects. So kudos to Bob and his team for another good year of building and project management.
And just if I may build on that, we've had one change with regards to our expected summer capital projects. It looks like we're pulling out the $800,000 we had penciled in for the STEM implementation at all the schools. It sounds like there still will be some equipment, but there's not the large scope change being proposed at this time for 2013.
Mm-hmm. Any construction?
Sorry. What does that mean we're pulling it out?
Well, given the status of Think Tank at the moment, we can't do any construction that would create larger STEM labs than we have, and we wouldn't go to the limit of reorganizing spaces. We are committed to implementing STEM next year if that works, and the board approves our final recommendation from Think Tank. But because the timeline is to go out to bid to move actual walls, maybe take out a lab here or a lab there, combine things, reorganize things, is just a construction cost we can't afford next year, given when it would actually finish a bid process. And so we'll do, you know, our plan is the schools have each identified spaces that they would use as STEM labs, and in some cases it's a single classroom, in some cases it might be two classrooms where a wall can be opened. It's going to be dependent on each building. But you have to remember that we're at capacity And so any STEM lab that is created, you know, comes at another decision, which is that we're doing something to move students around the building from room to room because those rooms are currently being used as classrooms.
So we, there was a lot said there. So are you saying we can't afford it?
That's the wrong language. Okay. We can't afford the time, you know, the time that it would take now to be able to get, you won't even begin to give consideration to the recommendations until the end of February.
For
Think Tank. And so then you'd have to go out to bid, then have to go to finance. I mean, by the time you could actually approve a project, we'd be well beyond the window that we could do that kind of work over the summer. So it's a year away now, you know, essentially, is what that means.
Well, I guess I know everyone's about process and due process and all that stuff, but I'm assuming it's a board interest that we move forward with STEM, regardless of whatever it means. The think tank will come out with its recommendation. Mm-hmm. We will discuss it and something may or may not move forward, but I would assume that STEM seems to be something that I've heard, at least from my perspective, would be important to move forward with in some form or fashion, and that I think the community has said everything they hear about Think Tank, they're not against the STEM part of it. So I don't know if it's because we're holding you guys up in this timeline that we shouldn't decide to authorize some sort of STEM capability somewhere where maybe we do, maybe it's not knocking down a wall, but we take one of those spaces that was big enough as a classroom and go ahead and budget the ability to do that.
That's exactly what we'll do. But that the $800,000 is really about construction costs, not about purchasing equipment or creating environments that could be used as STEM labs in our current restrictions within our facilities that we have. So we plan to do something, and even if it's in a self-contained environment within a classroom, but it is interwoven and it is dependent upon some of the other recommendations, because the way we organize students and the way we organize the facility will help dictate the capacity we have within that facility.
So is there any building where we thought we could put a full STEM lab without doing construction? By construction, I mean this $800,000. It's not the other stuff.
Currently, the only building we're looking at right now as being able to have a larger space is Franklin, because they created a larger space when they took a wall down of a very small room and a regular size classroom, and we used it for a while as a model classroom for literacy. And so that space is larger than a normal classroom and could be used as a STEM lab.
So I guess I'm asking the rest of you guys, but, you know, I would personally like to see that we move forward with at least one of those STEM labs. And if it's Franklin, because of the space, and allow the budget for it and not allow the think tank timeline to slow us down.
Well, here's John, what we've done. I mean, we've set aside currently, outside that $100,000, I mean that $800,000, there's $100,000 in the projected budget for STEM implementation. And that will be ample to do the kind of reworking of a classroom to create a STEM environment, which is really going to involve perhaps computer stands and tables and storage units and that sort of thing. Because at this point, too, we don't have a new STEM curriculum. So that also would limit knowing exactly what would be wanting the following year. But we can set up kind of a lab environment with just looking at it from the current space we have and purchasing equipment, furniture to go into that space, not dissimilar to what we've done in 21st century classrooms.
Yeah, I mean, Ann and I spoke a little bit about this. I just see the number go down, and so it's not clear to me what all the pieces are, but I guess I would just ask, encourage that whatever portion is independent of Think Tank could still be done. It's still
to look for.
Right. And we will do that. But that said, it won't be construction because that there is a lot of dependency upon that. Because you're taking spaces and redesigning them.
And I get that. It just, to me, it just feels like there's still a lot that could be done independently.
We agree.
So I'm just reacting to the 1.1 million now being 100,000. And so it seems like there's got to be some happy medium that has a lot of change.
When we have greater clarity around that, we'll certainly bring a definite plan to you for that. Should we need greater budget dollars for that, we would look to our current budget development and say, what can we take away that we were planning to do next year that we don't need to do, and we'll do this instead. Mm-hmm. And that'll just be part of the budget building process. But to think that we could go through a construction process, which would be to build bids and actually identify those spaces and start knocking out walls and reconfiguring labs and the learning centers in some schools. I mean, that would require us knowing that we are prepared to do that, and we don't feel we are.
So it sounds like what we're saying, if I can summarize, is don't want to lose the momentum around kind of this core initiative, which we all agreed a year ago is really critical. And to find, a way to move forward on that, even amidst the waiting for the final recommendation from think tank.
We definitely.
And I don't. Yeah, and I hear you saying that's what we're looking at. Yeah.
Schools continue to look at, and we'll be talking with principals about that tomorrow. In fact, schools would continue to look at their space to say, here's what we would designate as a STEM lab, mm-hmm. and whether or not they can do two, a primary one and an intermediate one. Mm-hmm.
And just so I'm clear, it's my understanding that we have many staff members who are ready, willing, and able and excited about implementing STEM into their curriculum, sure, into their enrichment of their students. So it's not like we're, begging for volunteers on this one. Right?
I don't think so. But we'll have better data on that when we complete our survey.
I'm not going to take everyone's time, but we got to think of a way to not let our think tank timeline allow us to move forward. So.
Not allow us to.
But I mean, move forward in the way we're thinking moving forward. Mm-hmm. So. Mm-hmm.
Well, it sounds like worst case scenario, if the think tank work isn't adopted, at the minimum, it sounds like to me anyway, the STEM curriculum is going to take place, and then there's going to be some supporting materials for these labs.
We have the current science curriculum, which Karen has explained. Until next year, the work of building a new science curriculum with the new Common Core in the spring. So we'll use our current, and we'll begin to incorporate elements of STEM into that.
So we can creep into it with our temporary labs, so to speak, and then. Mm-hmm.
Or if it has to be in just a classroom. What we won't be able to create if we can't take a classroom would be the lab experience. That's that would be the missing piece. But you just as they do with science now, they set up a lab in the classroom, and we have to do that.
And that's what these dollars are here for.
The 100,000, the additional.
That's left over. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Thanks, Dan. Policy.
January 25th policy meeting was rescheduled for February 5th from 1 to 2:30.
Yep. See you there.
More to come.
Other reports?
I attended the Lincoln 5th grade musical production, I Need a Vacation, yesterday with the kids.
And do you, Dan?
Absolutely.
Do you now need it?
It was quite enjoyable. I enjoyed hearing the new sound system. And I told my fourth grader that it's mandatory that he does the lunch.
I attended CIT, the Continuous Improvement Team, and that's a role that the board president takes on to go to their monthly meetings. The Continuous Improvement Team is a district-wide committee, and its job is to really kind of, I guess I would say, instill in the Teams for Excellence, which are our Professional Development Team, or PDT, Building Leadership Team, which is at each of our buildings, BLT, and then our Learning Leadership Team, LLT, and what they do under the umbrella of continuous improvement. So, and that's all around improvement, certainly for student achievement, as well as culture, environment. So the meeting on the 24th focused on the building leadership teams presenting their reports on their building goals, how teachers are infusing the district learner characteristics. I think we talked about this at a board meeting probably maybe 2 months ago. Julie Worthen, our director of communications, helped to build these posters that if we're all parents in the buildings, we've seen them, that have pulled out some of the learner characteristics and made them kind of kid-friendly, so the elementaries have a particular look and feel, and our junior high is a little bit more updated and got a little higher language. So those are all around the building. So they talked about that. Positive student behavior, the PBIS programs, and then also parent involvement. So was just a... And our winter MAP scores, that's right, our measures of academic progress. All schools reported significant progress in their building goals. They talked about their math and writing goals. Direct parent involvement on the building leadership teams is a critical part of communication, and they talked a lot about some varying levels of engagement with parents. Some schools seeing higher levels, 2-3 folks, some, you know, not so much, but talked about needing to, you know, really do some continued engagement of getting that parent voice, such a critical part of, you know, what the BLT does. One of the things, a story that I'll just share with you really quickly is our interim principal, Mrs. Schreikoffer at Lincoln, shared a story of a second grader, and this has to do with the learner characteristics. The board adopted these, you know, 2007, when we were also doing our visioning work. And then, to Tara Howard's credit, reminded us on a pretty much monthly basis, what are we doing with the learner characteristics? And through the work of our LLT and our other teams, started to figure out with our faculty, our teachers, and staff, you know, how to really make these concrete, for lack of a better word. And I would say probably the last 2 years has just really engaged that process, so that kids are not only looking at a, you know, a poster, but understanding what it means to them, whether they're a kindergarten or an eighth grader. So here's a quick story. She said there was a second grader, teacher told her this story, who came to the teacher in a panic. He had lost all his work and just about to fall apart. And then he looked at the teacher and he said, "But it's okay because I'm resilient and I can just redo it." And it was this kind of adult moment, she said, for all of us to say, you know what, that happens to everybody. But here we have... and the learner characteristics are part of Common Core, which I think our district is way ahead of the curve on. So it was just neat to hear that, so it's a good lesson for us. Superintendent search update this past Friday night and Saturday morning. The board interviewed 6 candidates. I would say we had great interviews. And this is to replace our retiring superintendent, Ann. We're fortunate to have 3 excellent finalists who will be interviewed by the board this week. And I'll go over those meetings in our upcoming meetings list when we finish the meeting. Thanks to all the board members for all their work on that. Anything else? Okay. Discussion items. Continuation of pre-K at-risk program.
We are bringing back to you the same recommendation that we brought to you in the previous year, and that is that in spite of no funding, or minimal funding, I should say, from the state for our early childhood, our pre-K at-risk program, which is a part of both our blended early childhood program, and then we do have one bilingual standalone program as well, that we recommend the continuation of that program. And like the foreign language, we've included that in the sustainability model and have demonstrated to you, I think, that we can sustain this program and believe that not only is it financially viable, but it is it was an important program for us and for our students and students who are at greatest risk of failure to help get them ready for kindergarten. And, you know, as we talked about the rigor of the Common Core, right, we know that that's going to be essential to help those students keep pace.
It's a no-brainer. Sorry, guys. It's an absolute no-brainer. I mean, you can't cut this program. The impact to our students is too great. Do we have any data point, though, as to how many of these kids are in our program at pre-K at risk, and then we carry them into...
We have the best data we can. I mean, we didn't keep it about 5 years ago, and we see that over the course of the elementary experience, of course, that number dwindles. It reduces over time. By the time they're in fifth grade, we probably reduced to about a third of the students who were in the pre-K program, maybe. But that's over a course of 5 years.
Right.
And so, you know, remember that when they begin, a good portion of them remain in third grade.
And that's what I mean. I think anybody could move from preschool to fifth grade mm-hmm. within a community. So I just was more curious as to the primary age that we would have, grades that we would have them.
I think we have pretty good stability in that program, though it's going to be the least stable of any program
right.
we have just by the nature of the population. Mm-hmm. And we have to, you know, recognize that.
Why is there's something goofy with the grant? Once you're denied it, you can never get it again.
The grant changed 3 years ago when we applied, and that was at the time they were reducing funds, and they changed the criteria by which you would qualify. So what had been an entitlement grant, you X allocation for X number of students, it became a competitive grant, which then they placed the district risk factors in a priority, and as you know, we typically don't score very well when it comes to that. And so we were denied the grant that year. And essentially, that closed the door. They, from that point forward, any money that they even added to that grant allocation was going to be open only to those school districts that had received the grant previously. So we still get the Birth to Three, which we use for the parent coordinators, but it's about $35,000, I think, dollars.
It's amazing that they're denying us this grant despite our demographic shift and our increase in numbers of students who would actually...
But in comparison?
Yeah.
We just don't... I mean, we don't...
I know. I just...
We don't... We understand exactly what you're saying, but when compared across the state and the dollars and the allocation...
Mm-hmm. When we got the... our board packet on the Thursday the 24th, so last week there was a... In the Glen Ellyn News, they do that community voice section, and it happened to be two preschool teachers from the Park District who wrote about the value of preschool programming, and Nora Greeno and Dana Palermo. And the opening to their article said, there are many benefits for children who attend a structured preschool program, whether you choose a Tuesday, a three-day, a four-day program. The social and academic benefits are endless, and then they go on to talk about that. But what resonated for me was when we talked about the value of just how much different statistically kids are in terms of preparation when they do attend, 3- and 4-year-old, and then teachers seeing that in kindergarten, that there's just a vast difference. So, important to be able to sustain.
Yeah. Is there a cap to the number of kids?
We have 80. We have provided for 80 students, and we do have a waiting list. Now, we wouldn't have to cap it at 80 any longer because we're paying for the program, but it was capped based on the funding that we had previously, and we've maintained that.
Okay.
We'll bring this back next board meeting for approval. And our next item for discussion is purchasing a data warehouse, and this is something that, you know, like John's list, it's been on my list for a long time in terms of being able to really have a robust data system in the district, and we really have the first opportunity to do so because we now have Skyward as both our student program software and our financial and HR program. And so we've been building our own data warehouse for a long time, and the tech department has done a great job. I would give kudos to Gail Minkus, who has built it, maintained it. She works closely with Karen and Nancy Moak and all the programs to make sure that we, you know, create a data warehouse that is usable for our teachers. But we're very excited about the prospect of having one purchased through Skyward, where we can link our students' information system right to the data warehouse. And we can also link our financial data to the data warehouse, which will allow us to also build a better, more efficient, cost-effective model.
Okay.
So this is a really exciting purchase for us to consider. I don't know, Mike, if you want to add anything to that.
Mike, is there anything about this, the purchase, knowing what we want to do with the data, that it isn't able to do? Or are there workarounds if we want to add anything?
Oh, no, I think this will do almost everything that we're doing currently, with the exception of a couple of forms that we're like integrated in. Otherwise, we're not seeing any obstacles that would prevent us from doing exactly what we're doing now and building on to do more.
I think that's the key, that what it might not be able to do now, if there's something that, and that will happen.
Right.
You know, somebody will think of something, they want something else, they want data for some other reason. And,
right.
Now that we've got that synergy, it should be able to be built.
Yeah. That's good.
And we talked quite a bit at finance last time, so if you want to hear that discussion, it's online.
Thank you, Dan.
Technical and very excited.
I'm going to go back to you on that.
Steve was here, so
I didn't. Yeah, that's good.
It must have been Steve. Very technical.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mike.
Okay, that's it for discussion items.
Have the summer painting.
Oh, sorry.
That's right.
I have the summer painting. This is part of the summer projects. And we're looking to paint. All elementary schools have been painted, as you know, and we're looking at painting Hadley as the last school to be painted, and in conjunction with our learning center remodel, we hope. The two would go nicely hand in hand, and take that building out for the summer, pretty much in terms of use. But this will complete upgrading and repainting all of our buildings. So, really thanks to Bob and his department for getting this through and getting our buildings painted in an expeditious manner.
Yeah, they look great.
And we talked about this at finance, too. I think originally the guesstimate was $150,000. We're now at $225,000 because we added
pods / auditorium cafeteria.
For half.
So now we're getting the whole
building.
Wax.
Yeah. And it will be coordinated should the LMC be approved, we would, the color schemes would be coordinated.
Mm-hmm. That's a refresh. Is that it?
All right. I'm sorry.
That's right. Upcoming meetings, January 30th, 2013, special meeting, 5:30 at the Crown Plaza in Lombard. January 31st, 2013, a special meeting, 5:30 p.m. at Kai's Restaurant. February 1st, 2013, special meeting at 5:30 p.m. Crown Plaza, Lombard. February 11th, 2013, a regular meeting at Forest Glen will be held at 7:30. That's our next board meeting, regular board meeting. And then February 25th, 2013, our next regular business meeting, 7:30, back here at the Central Services Office. Okay. Are there any other matters to be considered by the board at this time? Public participation. If there's anyone who would like to comment, you have 3 minutes.
I know. I just wanted to follow up on a comment Mr. Kenwood made, in which you said that the community doesn't seem to be against STEM. And I guess the question
what I
is
said is that what I've heard in the emails is that they're not.
Okay, so
I don't know if they are or aren't.
So, as follow up to that, I'm just wondering. And you answer my next question, what data does he have to suggest that, or if there is a plan to gauge community support for STEM or any part of the think tank recommendations. And I guess I just want to reiterate that you consider sequencing of taking action on think tank recommendations until after the new superintendent is installed. And I do have another question, because you mentioned about the hiring of a new superintendent. I'm wondering to what extent you're looking for someone who has STEM experience, and the candidates that you are interviewing, one has not yet been approved program. So how much of that is being factored in for someone who will actually be leading that?
Thank you.
Thank you. Was it less than two?
It was.
Thank you.
I have a question. So,
could you please fill out a green sheet?
Yeah,
public comment.
At our regular business meetings, in order to have it recorded, which we need to have it recorded, We'd like you to fill out a green form. They're right in the front.
Fill
and
out
then
a green form before I speak?
If you would.
No, after I speak.
No, you can speak. But it's not a discourse, so it's public comment. We'll take the information down, and then we'll be able to get back with you based on the information.
Now, my question is how the process works. Yeah. So, I mean, she spoke very eloquently about how all the parents feel about the Think Tank initiative, and I didn't hear anybody sort of respond. Mm-hmm. So I was curious what the timeline is for your response, how each of you guys feel about the Think Tank initiative recommendations, and is this really going to happen, or is this still talking about happening, or where are we?
The board will hear Think Tank's current thinking at the February 25th meeting. Mm-hmm. What we've done with all of the feedback at this point is gather it. It's really been turned over to Think Tank, all the emails, all the feedback. I think, you know, we've heard from many parents in a variety of ways, and so that's all being given consideration at the Think Tank level and letting them grapple with the recommendation. It'll then come to the board for their discussion and ultimately approval or not approval of a recommendation that Think Tank is making.
And when is that?
The 25th, that will
February
be.
February 25th.
It will come back.
You guys will all vote on the 25th.
It'll be coming back to the board on the 25th in a final recommendation from the Think Tank. So that doesn't mean the board will take action on the 25th.
What?
They may take action on March, the next March meeting. It depends on what questions they send back. But at that point, it will be in the board's hands. It will be out of Think Tank and into the board for whatever decision it's going to make. It's not going to go back to Think Tank again and come back. The board will either make a decision or not.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Other public participation.
Would you make sure you fill out the sheet?
Yeah, can we make sure we have your name and email?
Yeah,
we can follow
one
up.
Last question. Yeah, there's
someone back there asking.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Mr.
I was wondering if the actual recommendation that is going to be recommended on the 25th, that's going to lead, you know, from here to Think Tank, like he just asked, if that report or plan is going to be posted on the website for people to see before it's presented to the board or in some.
The board report will be
part of the board package.
The presentation will not necessarily be a bit prior to the presentation. Typically, we do the presentation for the board first and then post it on the website. But the board report will be placed on there.
Mm-hmm. Will that include the survey of the teacher? And is the survey of the teachers anonymous?
Yes.
It will be anonymous?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Then,
Erica said, we don't engage in a back and forth question. If you give your questions to Maureen, I will be sure to contact you tomorrow.
Yeah, we've all been really good about responding
to
people.
Answers.
I think you all know that.
Yeah.
And we promise we'll get back with
so
you. We will.
We're not doing an open forum tonight.
Yeah.
In my extra minute or whatever. I thought the presentation, and I told you this last week, of the dual language program was done superbly. It's been proven effective. It's been piloted. And it's proven that dual language programs are more effective than the program I teach in, which is a bilingual program. The reason we don't do it in Joliet is because it would cost too much. Okay. Down there, we get about 9,000 per kid. Here, we get about 12,500 per child. A huge difference. And it's an advantage our district has to implement proven educational models that work and benefit our children for the future. I was wondering if the Think Tank has been, if all the elements of the Think Tank put together have been scientifically analyzed and proven to be effective to benefit children, or is this just sort of like, I mean, I know that's just an inspiration, but I didn't see a plan with that video that was presented there. I saw an inspiration. I saw ideas. I saw outside-the-box thinking. I saw a child I have in my classroom is probably ADHD who needs a lot of help but is a fantastic artist. But, you know, I don't know that that comes down to a plan. As a teacher, I individually plan for that student to help him do as much and as well as he can in the future. I am a little leery of the plan going forward. I think there's a lot of moving parts. And
thank you.
I'd like to see more planning.
Thank you. And if you have questions that you want responded to, please make sure that we have your data. Okay. Other comments? Yes.
My name is Steve Seney, and I'm a local resident. I've been involved with STEM since 1988-89 as an undergrad, and I'm a science and engineer with a math background. So as I follow the discussion that went back and forth, I think STEM is a great idea. I like the idea. I don't buy into the reconfiguring the classroom. I've seen it done at other smaller schools with lack of funding by keeping it in the classroom. Okay, we talked about spending $100,000 on STEM kits, which I think is probably reasonable based on the funding that I knew back in the mid-90s when it was like $20,000 to $30,000 a classroom was what the National NSF Foundation grants that I was on at Washington, D.C., we talked about something similar. Okay, but what we didn't discuss is the training. The Stanford University group that kind of helped roll out STEM and are really outspoken about it stressed the need for teacher training. Mm-hmm. And we've talked about spending $100,000. At the prior meeting that I was at, it was very obvious that the training had been neglected. We talked about a couple of in-service days where staff was recommending a few weeks of training over the summer, really pushing for the change. So why would we spend $100,000 on kits when we haven't laid out the plan for the training and haven't found the funding for the training? Mm-hmm. Okay, let's do it. But let's not buy the kits until we know how we're going to implement it.
Thank you. Thank you. Other comments?
Yeah. I wrote my questions on my green sheet, and I'm so glad you went first because he took the words right out of my mouth. I would like to know what exactly is going to be in the STEM STEAM Lab. Can it be kept in the classroom, the materials, for real-time learning? You know, if teachers are integrating and they want to, you know, they're doing numbers and they want to take out a thermometer, that it's right there. They don't have to make reservations to go to the lab in a week. They can use it for real-time learning. I don't know what a STEAM STEM lab looks like at the elementary level. I don't envision my second grader playing around with a Bunsen burner, though. Where in each school would the STEM lab be if you did indeed make the lab? To me, my school and other schools that I've been in are overcrowded. Are you going to bump out some classrooms and make less sections? And are those class sizes then going to be bigger? Should we maybe wait? Would it be prudent to wait till the new science standards come out with the Common Core and then buy the materials or the kits and adjust that so we have what we're teaching for those standards? And I just want to make sure that when the think tank comes back that I know where the labs are going to be in each school.
Thank you. Other comment?
One of the things that we mentioned is the transition that we'll have with the superintendent and also with the board. Our superintendent mentioned the idea of perhaps the board taking action on the March meeting on this initiative. And we know that four of the members of the board end their term in April. Mm-hmm. So we were wondering if it would be a better decision to postpone that decision until we have the new board, so they can be fully aware and then also they can keep us accountable, they can keep us charting the course that we want for the next few years for our children. So I would really request the board to not to take action in March, but actually delay them until April when we have the full board that will continue with this mm-hmm. initiative. I think mm-hmm. it would be extremely important. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm happy to answer that question to you in email or give you a call.
I have another question. I'll fill it out on the green sheet, of course. But when people ask questions and then you respond to these questions, is there any place that the public can see this Q&A go back and forth, or is it really just an individual discourse?
There's on their website, most of the questions that we've heard tonight are questions that with minor, you know, tweaks the board has heard and have been asked over the course of the last couple of months. Mm-hmm. And so if you go to the website, there is a link for the think tank, and you'll see frequently asked questions. Okay. That's one place to start. And
no, that wouldn't be the actual questions. But okay, and then are any of you guys members of the think tank? No, that's a completely separate situation.
Mm-hmm. All right, anything else? All right, thank you very much. The board has determined it has a need to adjourn to closed session tonight to discuss the following matters. Collective negotiating matters between the district and its employees or their representatives, or deliberations concerning salary schedules for one or more classes of employees, and the appointment, employment, compensation, discipline, performance, or dismissal of specific employees of the district or legal counsel for the district, including hearing testimony on a complaint lodged against an employee or against legal counsel for the district to determine its validity. May I have a motion to adjourn to closed session?
Motion.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Kenyon?
Yes.
Mrs. Howard?
Yes.
Mr. Black?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes. All right.
What would you take?
No action. No action when we return from closed session. Yeah. Right. Thank you. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Yeah. You're welcome. Thank you.